Doctor's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
All right, so we are back. And with that, going to talk a little bit about what does it mean in the new year for a local community as well as the legislature and county government, and kind of, you know, you hear about reorganization, you hear about a new legislative session, but what does that really mean? So Town of Clinton, we had our reorganization meeting on January 1st at 4 p.m. It was a little bit later, so it was good.
Yes.
And what happened is I was sworn in for another four-year term. Councilman Mike Humphrey was sworn in for another three-year term, and Councilman Ross Traphagen was sworn in for a three-year term. So with that, we have a new legislative body for the town of Clinton. Anything that we had outstanding starts fresh. So anything we didn't pass in our last meeting of the year has to actually be reintroduced. We can't carry anything over from a new year. Same thing with the state legislature. So right now we're still in lame duck, and I believe they're meeting today and Thursday, and that will be, and I don't know if they're meeting Monday next week, but definitely today and Thursday. And then what happens is everything that is still outstanding, so any legislation that had been considered that had not yet been voted on and did not yet go to the governor's desk has to be rebooted.
So they start all over again.
They start all over again.
Right.
And anything that was passed by the House, either the Assembly or both the Assembly and the Senate, that goes to the governor's desk, the governor has 10 days in which to act on that legislation. So after that, it becomes a whole new ball game. And for those that don't know, so our legislature is a part-time legislature. On average, for every two-year period, there's an introduction of anywhere between 8 and 10,000 bills. Doesn't mean they all go to a committee, but that's how many bills actually get introduced. When you whittle it down and those that get actually signed, you're probably looking at under 500 of those that will actually get signed.
Right. So we're talking about an enormous amount of paper being pushed. And if you've ever read a bill, sometimes they're a paragraph, sometimes they're 10 pages.
Sometimes they're several hundred pages.
Exactly. So it depends on the complexity of the issue. It depends on if it's an amendment to an existing bill, if it's an addition to a bill, if it's whatever it is that's being introduced. We'll determine kind of what the bill is and what it looks like and how hard it is to move it. Right. And, of course, then the political atmosphere also determines how hard it is to move a bill through. So
who introduced the bill?
Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of layers of bureaucracy at play and political, you know, environment at play. So lame duck is an interesting experience, and I guess something that we wanted, you know, to talk about a little bit here, because people talk about it all the time, lame duck, but what does that really mean for us as residents of the state? How does that affect us?
Right. So I'll use an example of a bill, the OPMA-OPRA bill, which is the Open Public Meetings and the Open Public Records. Senator Weinberg has been pushing for an expansion of the existing legislation, and it's been through multiple committees. Now, depending whether or not it actually goes to a vote before the end of lame duck, determines whether or not it has to start from scratch, go back through the committee process to then go back to the floor. And you know, here's where a lot of bills will tend to die as well, because if you couldn't get it done within that two-year period, you know, there may not be the political will to actually move it forward.
Right.
You know, I'm not taking a side either way with this. I'm just kind of, this is the
process.
The process of how it works, yeah. Exactly. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, which bills in lame duck for this week, what's going to, I think the last time I looked, there was a bunch of committees that were moving bills out of committee. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that, those play out and which ones will actually go to the floor for a vote, or which ones will just die a natural death, and then which ones get resurrected
right
after the state of the state.
Right. And then, of course, you know, as you said, the governor has 10 days to sign on or not
right
after that period. So that also plays a role in kind of what happens or doesn't happen
right
going forward. And then, you know, even if something doesn't get passed in lame duck, if it does get resurrected, in what form and what shape does it come out?
Right.
And so you sort of look at those bills and you say, well, the format was this when it was started, and then it sort of fell off the wagon and it didn't make it out of lame duck and they couldn't get it passed, and now it's come out in some other completely different shape and form.
Right.
And so what was the trading that went on the floor
right
to get it out? And so that's the political process is compromise. And it's like any other negotiation. If you were in a corporation and you were negotiating a deal, it's the same concept. It's
right
just politics. And so there's still compromise and negotiation going on behind closed doors that we're not necessarily privy to. So you have to read between the lines and see, you know, how things started and where they end as to who kind of got involved and how and in what ways and why.
Right.
And so you have to be willing to read through it and sort of deconstruct the words to figure it out.
And it's a lot of work. It's not,
yeah,
you know, that's I think probably the biggest struggle, you know, even for us as local electeds,
yeah,
to stay on top of all of the bills that potentially have an impact. And, you know, I'm grateful to the league because there are legislative committees and staff that are reviewing bills constantly. But it's making sure that, you know, there, one bill, which may look good, can have a negative impact
right
on a community. So I'll use the example of the connection fee for water and sewer for public utilities. So, you know, the bill was that, and was signed, so it is now law, affordable units only pay half of the connection fee. I guess one of my concerns that I had raised is from a rental unit perspective, no one, the renter is not benefiting from that discounted connection fee.
Right.
It's the developer who's built the property. Now, you know, for a for sale unit, maybe that makes sense. But we didn't, you know, again, trying to stay on top of it and look at it from the global perspective of what does that mean to a community? And who now absorbs those additional costs? Because it costs the same to connect, whether it's an affordable unit or a market rate unit.
Right.
So how do we ensure that if we're going to offer those discounts, that discount is then passed on to the renter?
Right. Well, it's always the question when we see legislators legislating, a bill may be good in theory, but not great in practice, right?
Right?
And so that's the way with politics and policy in general, is there's a lot of great policy in theory, but when you put it into practice and you see how it plays out and you play it out to the end,
right,
which is always a good practice, right? But you don't always see people doing, because not everyone lives in the same environment, and not every town is the same, and not every community is the same, and we have such a diverse state, which we talk about ad nauseum on the show,
right,
that, you know, when you play every bill out to the end, you know, in practice, a lot of times we find that, you know, what started out as a good idea with good intentions has some serious adverse consequences to small towns like ours and a lot of the small towns here in Hunterdon County.
Right.
And so those sorts of conversations, you know, hopefully are being had when these bills are being, you know, discussed. But I'm not sure that that's the case all the time.
From the league's perspective, they try to have a complete representation, which is a lot of times why we won't take a position on a bill, because what hurts one community helps another.
Exactly.
So, you know, we'll stay neutral in the discussion. But again, it's making sure that someone is paying attention and understanding it from the bigger perspective as well as from the minutia of the perspective.
Right.
You know, for us, it's different. We own a water and sewer utility, so that has a significant impact. We are not a private entity that is a for-profit entity.
Right.
We are a public entity that, you know, we're not there to make money. We're there to provide a service to our residents and our ratepayers.
Of course.
So that definitely makes it a little bit more difficult when it comes time to have those discussions. Now, you know, you talk about reorg from a county level.
Mm-hmm.
So the county, Hunterdon County's reorganizing tonight, whichever way you want to use it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I meant.
I do, and it's hard to say.
So they have their reorganization tonight, and Suzanne Legay, who retired last year, it will not be reseated. It will be John Lanza and Zach Rich will be the two new freeholders on the county board. Works the same way. Anything that was not completed last year has to be reintroduced and renegotiated for 2020.
Right.
For townships, because we've got a couple of townships that rotate the mayor's seat, that is something else. So, you know, in the town of Clinton, Flemington, Clinton Township, Lambertville, Highbridge, a number of other municipalities, the mayor is directly elected. But in the township committee form of government, they rotate the seat. And sometimes it stays with the same person because there's the ability, you know, for work to get done.
Yeah, for
continuity. And there's a consistency. And the committee's all on board together that, you know, this is what they want to do. And maybe they allow it for 3 years, maybe they allow it for 5 years, whatever it may be. And in some cases, they rotate it every year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's, for me, that's always been an interesting concept of when you rotate it. So I have 1 year in which to try and accomplish what my agenda is.
It's a high pressure year,
right?
Because you have a very short period of time in which to accomplish anything. And people think a year is a long time, but
in government
a year is, you know, a blip on the radar.
Right.
And so for anyone to accomplish anything in a year is kind of a miracle.
Yes.
I think.
Well,
having sat in my seat for not that long, it's, you know, I recognize as a person who has very little patience or tolerance for the slowness of anything, it is painfully obvious that it takes a long time and a lot of effort in order to move things along, even with everybody on board and everybody agreeing. There's just a process.
Right.
And in order to do things the right way, you have to follow the process.
Right.
And so to get things done in a year is just astonishing. And so anyone who does it, kudos to them, because that's impressive.
Right.
Really, it is.
It is. Here's the other thing, though, and this has probably always been my concern about the Township Committee form of government. And again, you know, this is my personal opinion on it. You don't have, if you don't give someone, whichever, you know, individual is the mayor, the term to really accomplish, it becomes more of a political football, right? Now we're using it like, all right, well, I'll vote for you to be mayor, but I want this, this, and this.
Sure.
And similar to the legislature, you're now negotiating.
Yes.
And do you negotiate yourself to a point where it is worth it, not worth it? You know, those are the kinds of questions we need to be asking, and people who live in townships should be holding their elected officials accountable, because this is really not supposed to be about, you know, I want to be mayor, so you can't be mayor sort of thing. This is supposed to be about what's in the best interest of a community.
Well, you know, certainly and this is my personal opinion, from my perspective, I would much rather directly elect my representatives. I would much rather have a say in
who's going to be mayor,
is representing me on any level, whether it's, you know, my mayor or my president. I would like my vote to matter.
Yes.
And so in these forms of government, it doesn't feel that way. Whether that's accurate or not, it's the perception.
Right.
And so, you know, I see that as problematic in some ways. And then in other ways, you know, these governments have functioned for however long they function, and it's working for them. And I understand that there are benefits to that. I do see issues with the continuity, because I think, as we were just saying, you know, if you've only got a year, I don't see how in a year, and then you have some sort of tumultuous takeover in a year, how you transfer power, for lack of a better description,
right,
in a, in a, in a way that is beneficial to the town.
Right.
And that's the goal of local government, right?
Is to benefit the goal.
Is to benefit the town, not the individual. And
yes.
So that would be my biggest concern, is when you have these environments where we're in now, where it's so politically charged and contentious, even within parties.
Right.
Whether it's,
absolutely.
You know, whoever it is, within the Democratic Party, within the Republican Party, Libertarians, Green Party, whoever it is, everyone's fighting with everyone at this point.
Yes.
And so when you see that, and then you have these sort of hostile circumstances, my concern is you wind up with towns suffering.
Right.
And that's what we don't want to have happen, because there's no real place for party politics in local government. And I say that as, you know, a very much a party person.
Right.
I am what I am, and everyone pretty much knows that. But when it comes to my local government, my goal is to improve my town, not to improve my political party.
Right.
And so when we see this happening, that's where I get very concerned. And I wonder, where is the focus? Is the focus on the ego, or is the focus on the town? And so that's where I start to go, well, what's the end result going to be for these communities?
Right.
So, and I'm not sure where you go with that.
I don't know. I mean, and you know what? We should probably go to a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back and kind of continue the conversation, because I think it's important for us to really delve into this and have people talking about it. So stay tuned. We're going to do a couple of commercials, and then we will be back.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care. At a moment's notice, Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
All right, so here we are. We are back again, and, you know, we get to go on our rants while we're here a little bit.
It's one of my favorite things to do, obviously.
Mine too. But here's really what it comes down to for me. You know, I do this because of a passion for giving back to the community, and it is. It's a commitment to community. This is not supposed to be... One, I'm not getting rich off of being mayor.
No.
I'm not.
That 27 cents an hour isn't really...
No, I'm really not going
sending
anywhere.
The kids to college.
Although the good news is I don't have to pay for babysitters anymore.
Yes, you're
so
fortunate
that does,
in that.
You know, I actually do get to see some of that.
Right.
I get to keep some of it this time.
Right.
But it really comes down to, you know, why people run for office and... what they want to give back to their community. I mean, if someone is running because they want to stick it to someone else, they want to stick it to a party, that's where I wind up having the issue. I mean, I will work with anyone and everyone as long as they have the same commitment to their community that I do.
Right.
I mean, I don't expect everyone to give the 100 hours a week that I do, but close to it.
Mm.
You know, and when you see political infighting because, you know, someone wants to stick it to someone else and not give a mayor, I have a problem with that.
Right.
Because that shows a disruption, and residents see that. You know, when there's been a continuity for years,
right,
on how something is done, and then all of a sudden someone comes in and says, no, I want to do it differently, there's a problem.
So I don't have an issue with doing things differently, and you and I disagree on this a little bit, in the sense that I think change is good, and I think change can benefit everyone. I think it's good to have different perspectives. I think it's good to look at things through a different lens periodically. I think it's important to broaden our horizons and take a step back and consider different perspectives. I think if we don't do that, we become myopic and we fail to see the bigger picture until it's on top of us and we lose control.
And I don't disagree with that.
Yes, that we don't disagree on that. But I think where we're seeing the bigger issues come in, and this isn't particular to Hunterdon County or even New Jersey, this is nationwide in this country at the moment, and I am going to get on my soapbox for a minute, is we've lost our ability for discourse.
Yes.
And not
civil
just
discourse.
Between any kind of discourse. People aren't even talking to each other. People aren't speaking, much less being civil. And so the ability to have conversations, not just across the aisle, but within our own parties about things upon which we disagree is fundamentally destructive to democracy.
Yes.
And so when we go down that road, I think we lose sight of our end goal.
Mm-hmm.
And our end goal as a community, certainly our community, is to make it better for everyone.
Right.
It's not to make it better for me, Riley, on Center Street, and my kids. It's
right.
to make it better for me, my neighbor's neighbors, and every single person in the community, and by extension, all of the people in every community around us.
Right.
And so, you know, while this sounds somewhat cheesy or corny, I think it is important to come from a perspective that there is not a scarcity of resources. There is an abundance of resources.
Mm-hmm.
And if we all are committed to the concept that we can work together to find solutions that perhaps don't appeal on every level to all of us, and certainly I have compromised in ways that I never anticipated compromising, you know, that we will all be better off for it.
Right.
And I'm not seeing that. And I'm not seeing that in my peers. I'm not seeing that across the aisle. I'm not seeing that in conversations online. I'm not seeing that nationally in my political life, or even in my personal life. And
right.
so I think that's something, you know, that is a, you know, you can extrapolate that out from what we were talking about earlier to bring it back around to our conversation about reorg and what that even means for people is when you see these disruptions and these fights over who's going to be mayor and who's going to have the power and who has the control, and you see that this is a lack of communication and a lack of discourse about what it is to be a local government, what it is to be a community. And so that's where I start to feel a level of concern for residents and people and how that is going to impact them on their day-to-day lives.
Right.
Because local government, as we've discussed ad nauseum again, is really what impacts your day-to-day life.
Yes.
So
true.
That's my soapbox for today.
No, listen, I don't disagree. It's really – so I took the last month pretty much to kind of decompress and you know, look at a lot of different things. And, you know, we took time with family so that we could, one, reconnect because it is. You know, my kids are teenagers and they're in 15 different directions.
Yep.
My husband's crazy busy working. You know, I've been kind of running around doing a bunch of different things. So we really took that last 2 weeks to, one, reconnect as a family. And it was interesting the conversations that we started to have, which are the same conversations that we need to have with our neighbors, with people we disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw the one day when we were doing garbage pickup on one Saturday, there was, right after the election, there was a, someone had done a handwritten sign that was just atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
It was hateful. I mean, the hate that I felt from it, and I'm pretty immune to a lot of you know, things that get said around me. I've got a pretty thick skin. It doesn't really faze me. I know that people are angry about a lot of different things. But the venom that came out of that handwritten thing that was on every pole and every tree actually concerned me.
Right.
We as a society need to figure out how to communicate and disagree in a way. You and I have disagreed on more than enough things.
Yes.
But it hasn't impacted our ability to communicate or to work together.
No.
There are people who believe that because they disagree, they have to do it in such a vehement way that hatred just spills from their pores.
Right.
That's probably what concerns me more than anything, is we can agree to disagree. And I mean, I've worked with people who are on the complete opposite side of the spectrum from me.
Yep.
But we look at it from, we need to come together and have some sort of an agreement on some things. Mm-hmm. You know, agree to disagree on others, but where it's important to our communities, to our counties, and to our state, that's got to end. And I don't know how we get there.
I'm not sure how we get there either. And it's the kinds of things that you're talking about with that flyer that was posted and the rising hateful attacks on minority groups that are so disheartening and frightening and just fill me with a sense of we've gone off track.
Yes, we absolutely have.
And I don't know what it is going to take to reset, but certainly something needs to happen, and people need to step up and say enough is enough.
Yes.
And that, you know, at a certain point, it's not my principle of whatever my belief is not enough to warrant this sort of behavior.
Right.
To justify this sort of behavior, or to turn my blind eye to it. Excuse me, or to say that, you know, well, that's an outlier, because it's no longer really an outlier anymore. I mean, the rising anti-Semitic attacks are, anti-Semitic attacks are exponentially higher now than they have been in decades.
Right.
And so, and that's not miles and miles away. It's right here in Hunterdon County.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with the way in which people of color are treated, black people are treated. It's the same with what's going on at the borders, you know, and we can all disagree on the way in which these things are handled.
Agreed.
But the way in which we treat other human beings should not be something we disagree about.
Right.
Because human beings are human beings.
Right.
And to think that we can't come to some sort of agreement about that is where I don't know how to move forward. That we can't all agree that human beings should be treated with respect and kindness and dignity.
Right.
Is where I don't know where to go after that.
Right.
When I can't get past that hurdle with somebody, that's where the conversation just sort of ends and I don't know what to do. And so that's why I feel a little bit stunned and shocked at where we are and as a country, and how do you move forward from there?
Right. Yeah, no, it's interesting because, so tying that back to reorganizations and state and local government, is this has sidetracked a lot of the good work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're reacting to situations that are happening, which is then taking away from the stuff that, you know, people have been trying to get done, the good work. And listen, I'm not going to agree with every piece of legislation that gets signed. You know, some of it I agree with, some of it I don't, but that's the way it's supposed to be. But when we can't even get that work done because of what's happening around us, even locally,
mm-hmm.
like I said, up until that time, seeing that sign on the trees, on every tree, on every pole, was a shock to the system.
Yeah.
Because it makes me wonder, you know, these are our neighbors.
Right.
Does someone hate me or what my beliefs are that much that they're willing to take it to another level? And, you know, that becomes the question that we have to answer.
Right.
Or ask. you know, I don't ever want to be afraid to go up into a public meeting and start a conversation. I get that we're going to disagree. And you know, I think here's the one thing that I'll say about what we've done. With our town halls, while there's been disagreement, it's been respectful disagreement.
Yes.
There's not been a finger pointing, yelling, screaming,
right.
hate-filled conversation. Because we've given everyone the opportunity to share their concerns. You know, and some of the stuff we have control over, some of it we don't. But the idea that, you know, when we host a town hall, do we need to worry that someone is going to come in and be different than what we've always had be? You know, do I have to worry about violence that I've never worried about before?
And I think, unfortunately, the answer is yes. And I don't mean to be hyperbolic, and I don't mean to be alarmist. But to think that we are somehow immune to what the rest of the country has been facing
right.
is naive.
Absolutely. I don't disagree. But I think, like I said, that's probably the hardest for me to figure out how to move forward with it.
Of course, especially having grown up in an area where it's something that you've never thought about. Well, not that you've never thought about, that you've never faced. And it's you've lived here your whole life, and now all of a sudden things have changed. And, you know, things have changed everywhere.
Yes.
It's just that you've always been here, and right. it changed around you.
Right. There's always been hate, and that's always been there. I mean, that – and I guess we just didn't see it because it was underground, but now it is much
– Well, and it wasn't directed at you.
Right.
So –
No, well, yes, not that kind of hate.
That's exactly.
Right.
So it's easy, and I don't mean this in a condescending way or in a patronizing way, but it's easy to not see hate when it's not directed at you.
Absolutely. I disagree.
And it's easy for us as, you know, relatively affluent suburban white ladies to not see it.
Right.
Because it's rarely directed at us. Now, of course, we're public officials, and you've seen it more and more as you went through your, you know, the beginning of your
right.
your public life to now, where you're even more exposed. And then, of course, public discourse has changed, as we were just talking about. And
right.
so we see it on both sides of the aisle. And just to be very clear to anyone who's listening, I know that this is not a partisan issue. This is coming from all sides, and it's gross, and it shouldn't be happening. So to anyone who's listening, please understand that I am aware of that, and I'm not suggesting it's one side or the other. And people have lost their minds. They think that they can say and do anything without any repercussions, that there's no consequences to your words anymore, that there's no consequences to behavior, that it's acceptable to call people any name that you would like to call them, and that that's okay.
Right.
That you can walk around doing and saying whatever you feel like without any consequence.
Right.
And no one's holding anyone accountable.
Or when you try, there's a comment made. So I'll go through a discourse I had with someone online talking about the town of Clinton. And, you know, listen, growing up, my grandmother always said to us, if you have nothing nice to say, you say nothing at all. Common courtesy, right?
Sure.
You know, that is, I can...
It's the grandma staple. We all heard it, right?
We all did. So, you know, there was some things said, and listen, I've never cared about I know that people don't always agree with me, but
sure.
when you make a broad statement about a community, then I have a problem. I mean, the broad statement was that our entire community is destroying the town.
Right.
Listen, I'm going to call you out on that. And when I said, you know, my grandmother always said, you have nothing nice to say, say nothing at all. Well, the comeback was, this is a free country, and I have freedom of speech, and if your grandmother's a Nazi or something along those lines, then seriously?
Right.
I mean, that was, rather than taking a step back to say, oh, maybe I did take it a little bit too far. Because, listen, we all do, right? I have absolutely said things that I've regretted.
Of course.
After the fact. But
same.
To then take a step forward and challenge.
Yes.
I mean, first of all, my grandmother's been dead for 21 years now. But, you know, there was common courtesies that you were always taught growing up. And that goes away when you're on social media.
Absolutely. I mean, social media has destroyed etiquette entirely, right? People think they're immune because they're sitting behind a keyboard. And you've heard this for the last decade, right? People have been talking about this for a decade. Mm-hmm. No solutions, no end result other than it's getting worse and worse and worse. You can sit behind a keyboard, you can say whatever you want, no consequences. You can swear, you can say the most grotesque things, you can threaten people's lives, you can threaten people with bodily harm, you can do all kinds of disgusting things, and there's no consequence to you. Mm-hmm. Occasionally you'll see somebody gets fired, occasionally somebody gets kicked off of Twitter. Who cares? They don't care. They make another account, they go back on, and they do it again.
Right.
And they're, you know, that's what they do. And the response is, well, if you don't like it, don't go online.
Right. Ignore it. But
as opposed to what the response should be, which is, if we were all in person and somebody acted that way, that person would be ostracized from the group. Right. That person would be kicked off the island, right? Because no one wants to hang out with drunk Uncle Henry.
True.
No one wants to be around that guy. That guy gets kicked out of Thanksgiving, right? Or everybody goes, oh, it's Uncle Henry. He's a real, we have to tolerate this guy once a year.
Right.
Right? And the rest of the year, no one calls him. No one goes to his house. No one hangs out with him. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. And so now, drunk Uncle Henry is online berating young people, right? Or whatever they're doing.
Right.
So the problem, of course, is we don't see that happening. There's no ostracism of that behavior. There's no people going, oh, that's terrible. Stop. You're gross. There's people going, cheering them on.
Yes.
And going, do it more.
Right.
And then they get the attention. And then they want to do it more. Yeah. And it's very much like dealing with your toddler.
Oh, my God, yes.
So, you know, I'm not sure how we got here from reorg, but it's important.
They're important conversations to have. It challenges the freedom of speech.
Well, look, we can't, you know, as municipal government officials, people can say whatever they want, and we can't challenge it unless it's, you know, threatening.
Right.
And that's fine. And I have a pretty thick skin. If you threaten, I'm going to tell the police, and they are going to find you.
Yes.
And that's how it's going to work. But otherwise, you know, yes, there is the First Amendment, and you have the right to say what you want, and you can't be stopped from that by a government agency.
Right.
Just for everyone's edification, the First Amendment only applies in government situations.
The question becomes, people who see it and cringe but don't do anything to call it out.
Bystanders.
Right. It's to see something, say something.
You should be an upstander. You should say something. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Ostracize. If everyone said, that's gross, stop, and piled on and said, no, 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 that person would be ostracized from the group and they would go away.
Right.
Or they would keep saying it, but
no one's listening.
But what you would remember from it are the 50 people that said, oh, that's disgusting, instead of the one person saying the disgusting thing, right? And so that's the power of groupthink.
Yes.
So if you had the 50 people going, why would you say something so disgusting, instead of 50 people saying disgusting things, I think we'd be in a much better position. But no one wants to be first.
True.
You know, it's very hard to be first. It's very hard to be courageous. It's hard to stand up and say, you're wrong. What you're doing is wrong, because you're going to get attacked.
Yes. Well, you know, and so here's the other question, and this is something that we struggle with as electeds, right? Because even though I may be responding and calling someone out as Janice Kovach, people see that's Mayor Kovach.
Yeah.
And it's not easy to kind of separate. And I got caught up on that, you know, when there was some stuff on Facebook and I was trying to make people aware of things.
Right.
I was letting them know based on what I knew as Janice Kovach, not as Mayor Kovach.
Right.
But people saw that and said, well, Mayor Kovach said this.
Right.
So it's really, you know, from our perspective, we get a double whammy.
Yeah.
You really have to stop and think before posting something. Which is why I don't think I have. I mean, I may have once in a while, but I've really tried to stay away from posting anything political, even on my personal page, because people view that as, well, that's Mayor Kovach.
Yeah.
And as a local elected, You know, I will take on issues. I will not take on that hate stuff that is constantly being put out there, or the memes that people are putting out, because that's what incites.
Yeah, I mean, I also think at a certain point, I don't know what I honestly have no idea what I've said to be, because, you know, social media, you say so much. I think there, you can have a personal life and a public life. I think you can have both. I think, you know, you run risks, and
absolutely,
you have to run a risk calculation and see how much risk you're willing to take on, and where it falls out,
right,
is ultimately what happens. And it, of course, depends on how public you are. I mean, you're very public,
right,
and because of your trajectory.
Yes.
Whereas some other mayors wouldn't be as public.
Right.
For a variety of reasons. So I think that affects how you have to act,
yes,
online.
And that's the one thing, especially with going into the league presidency in November, this coming November, being cognizant of the fact that there's 565 towns, Democrats, Republicans, Independents,
yep,
Libertarians,
all the things. You have to be very neutral.
I have to really make a conscious effort, because I'm going to lose credibility if I can't listen to all sides.
Yeah, but that's something you're very good at. I mean, so I would. It's also your personality too. Not just yours, one's personality,
right?
Everyone has their threshold, their tolerance level of what they can and can't do and what they're willing to do and where they fall on the spectrum of political world and the way in which they function. So different local politicians say different things online. I personally wouldn't put memes. I hope I haven't, because, you know, I'm sure somebody will go through my Facebook feed and find one after I say this and be like, you really wouldn't put memes? Here's one. I don't think I've put memes out. I definitely have a strong political position. Anyone who knows me knows what it is, and I don't shy from that, because
right,
I am entitled to it, just like anyone else is entitled to theirs. And
absolutely,
so I don't see anything wrong with that. It is not the town's position.
Correct.
And when I operate for the town, I operate for the town, and I speak very clearly about that.
Yes.
And I, every chance I get, talk about the neutrality of the town and how important it is for the town to not be political. And I've worked very hard to keep politics out of town, despite efforts of other people to put politics in town.
Right.
So I think, you know, I think it depends on, like I said, I think it depends on where you fall on the spectrum as to what you're going to do online.
All right. Well, hold on one second. We're going to hold that thought, because we're going to go to our next set of commercial breaks, and then we'll be back.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business. One business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo, y no hay salud sin salud mental.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business. One business at a time.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, we are back. We have about 6 minutes to kind of wrap up before we are signing off and the next one comes on. But since we did get completely off track.
Totally off track. I'm not sure how that happened. But, you know, we started out talking about reorganization and what right. it means. And, you know, I've gotten some emails asking me from folks who've gone to reorganization meetings,
yes.
like what's, you know, what is happening? What are all these resolutions? What is all this stuff going on? What does any of this mean? And so, you know, first let me say, you should feel free. First, you can always ask me anything.
Right.
Anyone can email either of us, call us, whatever, you know, find us. It's fine.
It's easy to find us.
Yes. But you should always feel free to talk to your elected officials. They are there to represent you. You can ask them questions. They will answer you. They'll tell you what's going on. They should be approachable. If they're not, they probably shouldn't be your elected officials.
Right.
So just bear that in mind. If you're at a meeting and you're confused, at the end of the meeting, ask questions. Or at the open portion of the meeting, ask a question. That's what it's for.
Right.
But, you know, the reorg process, we always rehire our professionals or hire new professionals depending on
if
what's
gone out to an RFP. Right.
right whatever's going on. And we run through that list. So our meetings are fast but somewhat lengthy for reorg.
Yes.
because we have a lengthy list of professionals that we need to put into place because of our utilities and the variety of things that we have to accomplish. And then, as the mayor mentioned in the beginning, people get sworn in. So just to clarify, any new council people or mayors or elected officials need to be sworn in.
Right.
So just to start from the basics, that's what happens.
Right. Anyone reelected or newly elected.
Exactly. Get sworn in, and that's really, you take an oath of office. You swear mm-hmm. to uphold the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of New Jersey, and all of those things. You say, yes, I will. And then you are a duly elected official, and you take your seat.
For the length of your term.
For the length of your term. exactly. Whatever it is. And then you take your seat, and you are now on council, or you're the mayor, or whatever you are. And that's kind of the beginning process
right.
of the reorganization. And then you run through your resolutions, whatever those are. You deal with any outstanding items that you need to deal with. And you're off and running.
Yes. It allows you to start the year. Because
yep.
so you need to do your appointments, obviously, for your professionals. You need to set a temporary budget. Because technically our budget ends 12/31 of that previous year. So budget process doesn't start until January, February. I shouldn't say, but budget process started last year. But the, you know, by the time
right.
we get through and get all the numbers that we're going to get from the state, the numbers that we get from our tax assessor, all of those pieces, and then we sit down to review as a group all of the budget requests, because obviously, you know, everyone asks for the world, and we give them a grain of sand.
Right.
because financially, that's what we can do. So, you know, we go through and we have to figure out the projects, what we can do, and then also what is the tolerance for taxes, and I'm going to get on my soapbox here, which
yep.
is taxes should never be flat and should never be reduced, because they are one-time fixes that will eventually come back to bite you. You know, if you are putting money into paying down debt or into new projects, then you are ensuring that the infrastructure is always moving forward. So the last couple weeks of the year, for whatever reason, there were 6 or 7 water main breaks. And they were significant water main breaks that required, you know, work from the staff. So as we're going through, what we're trying to do is ensure that those become less and less. That the water main breaks are, that the infrastructure is strong enough to support what it needs to support. Yep. So there's my soapbox on why taxes shouldn't be flat or reduced. I'll get off it now, because I know not everyone agrees. But... so, you know, we get that in place, And, you know, to Riley's point, everyone's sworn in. We kind of get an opportunity to get situated. You know, it's also a nice event for swearing in. So, you know, in my case, in the town of Clinton, I should say, so we had the governor, we had the congressman, we had Governor Murphy, we had Congressman Malinowski, Senator Kane was there, and former Assemblyman Jack Cittarelli. So for a small town reorg, you know,
we had a packed house.
It's a pretty impressive lineup.
Yep.
And, you know, here's the one thing I will say. The governor did point out, you know, and he acknowledged that the other electeds were there. He goes, you know, Janice and I may be Democrats and you guys may be Republicans, but this is about commitment to community.
Yep.
This isn't about party politics. And that, to me, is probably one of the most important things to be said. Because as we go into this year, and let's face it, it's going to be a contentious year in a lot of ways at the national level. And that means it does trickle down to the state, county, and local level because people are feeling, you know, how – agree, disagree, whatever it may be, they're feeling the effects of what's going on. And that is significant. And, you know, we need to be cognizant of the fact that people are feeling it and are opinionated, both sides. You know, and I struggle with how to remind everyone that, you know, we're dealing with potholes and water mains and sewer lines and development, not the national issues, but ultimately that stuff does trickle down. And it's important to make sure that we're addressing it.
Right.
So with that, thank you for those of you that signed in to listen to us. we hope you join in every week, and we will talk to you again next week. And, you know, over the next couple months, we'll have some guests in as well to talk about different topics. If there's topics you want to hear about, again, this is the opportunity. Tell us what you want to know, and we'll be more than happy to get out there and bring someone in to talk to them about it. So take care, and we will see you next week.
USA Radio USA with Chris Barnes.
Accused by dozens of women of sexual misconduct, Harvey Weinstein, the disgraced former Hollywood mogul, is now in a New York City courtroom where jury selection is getting underway in his sex assault trial concerning allegations from two of those women. Supporters of the alleged victims gathering outside the courthouse in Lower Manhattan. This woman says,
I'm just here to bear witness to this first day of what could potentially be the trial of the century, or is certainly the trial of my lifetime.
Jury selection could take a couple of weeks, the trial itself about 2 months. Weinstein claims the sexual activity was always consensual. A 5.8 magnitude earthquake on Puerto Rico's southeast coast this morning have caused building collapses, but we still have no word on any injuries or fatalities.
Does your business spend $500 a month or more on gas and electric bills? Did you know by making a simple free phone call, you can save up to 25% on your bill every month? What could you do with a 25% savings on utility bills every month? Energy deregulation is now available in your state. Making one simple phone call will show you how we can lower your gas and electric bills instantly, with no changes to your bill and no enrollment fee. This is a free service. The only thing you'll notice is a lower bill every month. Call U.S. Power and Light right now. Learn how easy it is to lower your utility bills for your business and save money. We promise. So if you spend over $500 a month on your gas and electric bills, please call right now and unleash your savings.
800-941-3381. 800-941-3381. 800-941-3381. That's 800-941-3381.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Accused by dozens of women of sexual misconduct, Harvey Weinstein, the disgraced former Hollywood mogul, is now in a New York City courtroom where jury selection is getting underway in his sex assault trial concerning allegations from two of those women. Supporters of the alleged victims gathering outside the courthouse in Lower Manhattan. This woman says,
I'm just here to bear witness to this first day of what could potentially be the trial of the century, or certainly the trial of my lifetime.
Jury selection could take a couple of weeks, the trial itself about 2 months. Weinstein claims the sexual activity was always consensual. A 5.8 magnitude earthquake on Puerto Rico's southeast coast this morning have caused building collapses, but we still have no word on any injuries or fatalities.
Hello, this is Wayne Allen Root, relentless conservative warrior, middle-class warrior, and always Trump warrior. I have a message for my fellow patriots across America. President Trump is making America great again. He's the only president of my lifetime who is keeping his promises, and his biggest promise is to build that wall. President Trump could only do it with our help. If Congress won't fund Trump's wall, we will. President Trump is one man against the world, and what globalists and socialists around the world want is clear, open borders. It's time to take a stand. We either build the wall, or it's the end of the greatest nation in world history ever blessed by God. That's why I founded the Root for the Wall PAC. 63 million Trump voters together will raise the money President Trump needs for the wall. Anyone who donates $100 or more will get a beautiful commemorative wall brick. Display it proudly. Call 844-ROOT-WALL. That's toll free, 844-ROOT-WALL, or go to rootwall.com. We will build this wall together. Call 844-ROOT-WALL or go to rootwall.com. Root for the Wall PAC. Paid for and responsible for the content of this message. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. rootwall.com.
As hundreds of thousands of demonstrators continue to show anger in the streets of Tehran and other Iranian cities, President Trump is sticking by his threats to attack Iranian cultural sites if that nation retaliates for the airstrike that killed a top Iranian general. Responding to reporters' questions yesterday, the president said, "Why are cultural sites off limits when American forces face roadside bombs?" Many experts say attacking cultural sites would amount to war crimes. Meanwhile, Senate Democrat and White House hopeful Elizabeth Warren is asking,
why does he pick now to take this highly inflammatory, highly dangerous action that moves us closer to war?
She spoke on CNN. Ford Motor Company reporting a 3% drop in its U.S. sales for 2019. Fourth quarter numbers down by 1.3%. Truck sales for Ford, though, were up by 9.1%. You're listening to USA Radio News.
If you're not sleeping as good as you should, take a tip from me, Wyatt Cox. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special, and use my promo code USA. Buy one, get one free special on a MyPillow is going on right now. And if you don't like it, you got 60 days to send it back. Try it. You believe it's for me, it's worked for over 2 years, and it'll work for you, too. MyPillow.com, Radio Listener Special, and use my promo code USA on a MyPillow premium pillow.
Israel's prime minister briefly raises some eyebrows with a remark he made at a meeting. USA's Chris Barnes explains.
Reports are during a weekly cabinet meeting on Sunday, Benjamin Netanyahu made the comment discussing a new Israel gas pipeline project, saying, "The significance of this project is we are turning Israel into a nuclear power." He then quickly corrected himself and said energy power, and the report says, with a smile, he continued his discourse. Israel has never confirmed or denied that it has nuclear weapons. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
The Chinese government is making some big changes after months of unrest in Hong Kong. USA's John Hunt reports.
China has replaced its top official in Hong Kong following months of protest in the semi-autonomous territory. Wang Zhimin, the most senior mainland political official stationed in Hong Kong, was replaced as director of the liaison office of the People's Central Government. The office has come under major criticism in both Hong Kong and China for misjudging the growing unrest. Liu Huing, who previously served as secretary for the Communist Party in northern China, will take over the role. Around 400 people were arrested during a New Year's Day demonstration that turned violent, with people throwing Molotov cocktails and vandalizing banks and shops, while police responded with pepper spray and tear gas. For USA Radio News, I'm John Hunt.
And I'm Wendy King for USA Radio News.